Blog Talk Radio.
Today's episode of the A New Day Show. Today is the day when we are committed to helping you to improve your cultural IQ. So I want you to fasten your seat belts, because for some it's going to be a rough ride. For others it will be an affirming ride. And for some there might be still be a bit of confusion. But I can assure you that by the end of the hour, all your confusion will be wiped away. Hanging out with me in the virtual green room is one of America's top, one of the world's, as a matter of fact, top researchers, Pepper Miller, and she is also the author of the new book, Black Still Matters. And I tell you, I have not completed the book, but from the sections that I have read, I tell you, this is the new Bible for everybody to have. I know you probably have the King James Version, the NIV Version, and all the others, but you are going to be adding Black Still Matters on the same shelf that where you have all your religious books and everything, because it is really, really a book that is written to not only improve our cultural IQ, but to just have us walk in the path of awareness. As a matter of fact, I have a local cable TV show here, and I know how much my crew supports me, and my head cameraman is a Caucasian gentleman, and he called me about 15 minutes ago, and I mentioned to him about calling into the show today and listening to the show, and I told him what the title of the book was, and he responded to me. He said, "Well, you know, I tried to buy black, but there's not too many here in Bethel, and I go down to Danbury to make sure I support the black." And I smiled as I listened to him. So whether you're Caucasian, whether you're Latino, whoever you are, if you are looking to live a more aware life, I want you to join in this conversation. And momentarily, I will be bringing my honored, distinguished guests on live. I just want to do a bit of housekeeping before I bring her on live. I want to remind you that you are encouraged to be part of the conversation. So if you already own the book, I want you to call in and share what you have gathered from the book. And you can do so by calling 646-915-8166. The chat room is also open, where you can join with other people in the chat room for a discussion. And after Mrs. Miller is off the air live, I am going to continue to discuss the book with those of you who will call in or owners of the book, or you are in the chat room. So these 2 hours today will be dedicated to this powerful book, Black Still Matters. So again, remember, you are encouraged to call in. You do not need to wait until the end. Call in and we will entertain your comments, your remark, and your feedback. And if you are someone who has been working with Mrs. Miller over the years and know the advantage of the service, of the work that she provides, I would love to hear from you as well. So again, the number to call is 646-915-8166. And I want to read a couple of the previews here from different of the people who preview the book prior to the publishing before I bring Mrs. Miller on live. And a professor from George Mason University says, "You don't want to stop reading this book. Successful marketing in the 21st century must go beyond what we are used to call the mainstream. Toward the end, Pepper uses the phrase cultural nuance, and that captures the spirit of this book. Her insights give marketers a fresh understanding of events all around us. I use What's Black About It," which was the first book that Pepper wrote with a co-author who I'm sure she's going to mention later on. And her insight gave marketers a fresh understanding of events all around us. "I use What's Black About It in my multicultural and ethnic market courses, but I am switching gladly to Black Still Matters." And that's from Professor Jeff Tinkulik. I might be pronouncing it incorrectly. It is spelled K-U-L-I-C. And I go down to Gwen Kelly, and she says, "What has been created here is the B school business case. No 21st Street Century Market can be taken seriously as business leader driven to the bottom line results without having read this book. It is a required reading." Excellent explication and presentation of why Black matters. Very readable, plain spoken enough that the reader gets the meaning without reading SME subject matter experts. Understanding of a familiarity with the terms. And this is from Marquise Miller. And I tell you, I could go on to read all the raving reviews. And later on in the discussion, I'm sure I will be doing that. I want to welcome guest 813 to the show. And please feel welcome to call in when you feel so, when you feel you have a question or a remark for my guest. So, without bubbling along, let me bring my honored guest on live. And Mrs. Miller, good morning, and how are you?
Good morning, Dr. Daphne. Thank you for having me.
Oh, what an honor. What an honor it is, I tell you. Black America, wherever they are, whether they are overseas, they are proud of what you have put together here with some contributors.
Thank you, Dr. Daphne. You know what I like? I like this book, too. It's Black Still Matters in Marketing, but it matters in, that's the name of the title, but it matters in marketing and politics and religion, in parenting, in America and society, Black in the world, Black Still Matters.
That's right. I want for, if there is anyone who might be listening live or on the archive who doesn't know who Pepper Miller is, would you please introduce them to who you are and why you are so committed to what you do, and just to set the pace before we go into Black Still Matters.
Sure. I am the president of the Hunter Miller Group, and we are a leading-edge market research firm and trend analysis firm in Chicago, Illinois. And we use a variety of research methodologies like focus groups and one-on-one interviews and ethnographies and in-home interviews and online surveys to help large corporations and organizations understand Black America. And this understanding helps them bond their brands more positively and effectively with our community. And so I wrote the first book, What's Black About It, because there hadn't been a cultural marketing book about Black people since 1976. And I wrote that with the late co-author Herb Kemp, my buddy, my friend, who passed away last year very suddenly. He had a heart attack, and I missed him terribly. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote the second book, which was that first book, Dr. Daphne, was published in 2006. And so 6 years later, there has been so many things that are very different about, America and society because of technology and a lot of other things that have impacted Black America. There was no iPhone, no iPad. The email marketing as we know it today, particularly leading with a company like Constant Contact, did not exist. There was no Twitter, no Facebook, no Tumblr, no Flickr, and there was no President Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. And what has happened is the Black America is more splintered and more different today than it has ever been. And it's different today in very meaningful ways. And I wrote the book around marketing, Black Still Matters in Marketing, because that's the area that I do most of my work with companies like Procter & Gamble and General Mills and Ford and American Airlines and Allstate and State Farm, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Those are the people that I work with. And I wrote the book primarily targeting them and secondarily for our community. It is an easy read. It is very readable and plain spoken. We are the secondary target because we need to understand our value in the marketplace as they do. Because we're losing our value. We're losing our value in American society. We're becoming, even though our population numbers are growing, we are becoming more and more invisible. And so I wanted to make sure that our value as a people in American society and in the marketplace is recognized. So it's less about targeting, and as you mentioned earlier, it's more about making sure society and particularly these corporations understand their cultural IQ, that they improve their cultural IQ about Black America.
Mm-hmm. You know, because I noticed in the introduction where you mentioned that marketers are not completely in the dark when it comes to issue of multicultural marketing, according to a 2008 study. Uh-huh. From the firm Hedrick and Stugglers?
Yes. Yes.
And
yes.
84% of the marketers believe that multicultural marketing was critical to their business, yet 40% said they don't know the financial value of multicultural groups in their companies. Mm. And that was very alarming to me. And again, yes. I went through and I was looking at the fast food industry and the Big M, for example. They tend to understand a little bit more why they need to cater to us. Yet, I look on black people who own businesses, and for want of a better word, sometimes they are ashamed to embrace who they are and
yes.
why.
Yeah, we are. Well, it's interesting. Society, we are penalized, and we, particularly in the black community, probably more so than maybe other, maybe I don't know, but we are penalized for embracing our blackness. Mm-hmm. And it's because of our history. Our history of slavery, post-slavery, and discrimination. So nobody wants to go there. Nobody wants to talk about it. The marketers don't want to talk about it. The young people say that the baby boomers are the enemy from within because we continue to want to talk about our story. But that is a marketing insight. Because it helps to understand who we are and why we are overly sensitive about everything and why we place a value, a premium on being respected. And so you use those. What happens is also people don't want to talk about how we're different. We're all from the human race. People are people. But different, well, what happens is people intentionally or not, judge each other because we're different. And that's what the problem is when we judge each other. But looking at people's differences and celebrating them and understanding how people are different, celebrating that, you can use it as an opportunity to connect with people, especially black people, in a very relevant way. So because Black America is different. We are, most of us are different from mainstream, and then we are different in meaningful ways from each other. And looking at there's so many insights that come from learning about the about how we are different that could be profitable to a business's bottom line. But to go back to your point, we are taught to not embrace our culture, and particularly in corporate America, or in politics, when you gain a very high level position, President Barack Obama dare not embrace black culture in the way that we would like him to. He would not be president of the United States.
That's right.
It's terrible because you know we are people and we are black. You know, mm-hmm. they are and Jewish and Chinese mm-hmm. and Muslim, but we cannot be black. You know, I don't know of any other culture or religion that is persecuted as much for celebrating their culture as much as we are.
I was excited when I was reading through the book and saw where you mentioned that oftentimes, when you do presentations and the question that you're asked of whether it's African-American or it is black, and mm-hmm. I said, oh, my God, and I put my hand over my mouth when I read that because I was born and raised in Jamaica, West Indies. I came to the United States in 1985. I live in a state where there are in a city where there are not too many black people, and I go to a church where there's not too many black people either. And I do a lot of training for the Commission on Children and all of that. And most of the communities that I am sent into, there are not a lot of black people. And I often get asked that question too. Are you black, African American, or Jamaican? So I was excited about the story you share, and I says, wow.
Yes,
you know,
I worked on black is back. And black is back, and I think it's interesting you said that, because one of the reasons why we talk about let me back up a couple of things. I worked on this research study with Radio One, which is a large conglomerate of radio stations owned by Kathy Hughes out of Silver Spring, Maryland. And we worked on the largest study about Black America to date, the Black America Study, and your listeners can find it at blackamericastudy.com. It's a lot of good information there, and I'm going to give you some other websites where you can find wonderful information about African Americans, and I'll repeat that again. But
yes.
We learned that Black people do have a preference in how they want to be addressed. I think 44%, and they have this wrong, prefers to be black, and 42% prefers to be addressed as African American, and 11% say they don't care. But we found that the influx of black immigrants like yourself prefer to be called black because they are not African Americans. But they do celebrate their blackness, but they definitely, because they come from the Caribbean, or Africa, they prefer to not be called African American, but they prefer to be called black. We found that the young hip hop generation brought black back into style, into hipness too. We keep evolving, you know. We were colored, we were Negroes, we were colored. We were African American, we were black, and we go back and forth. But African Americans, it is divided, and that's one of the questions. That's one of the number one questions that my white audiences ask is, you know, what do you people want to be called? And so, but we, even though we have a preference that 42% prefer African American, 44% prefer black, we do not get insulted or bent out of shape if you use either one. So I, throughout the book and in our conversations, we use them interchangeably.
Interchangeable, yes.
To give respect to all segments. Yes.
Because, you know, Pepper, I'm sure you probably experienced this too. In the section of the country that I reside and get into a lot of conversation, there is a long-standing tension between the different blacks from different places.
Different
countries.
Yeah.
You know, you know, Jamaicans are labeled as people who work 900 different jobs. You know.
Yeah.
And there's all these labels and different things, and I oftentimes say, why can't we just go back to what Rodney King said? Why can't we just get along?
Right.
Because,
Go ahead.
Penny.
No. We have a contributor that wrote about the black immigrants. I worked on the census 2000 and the 2010 campaign interviewing different groups of black Americans. And you're right, there are a lot of different labels and a lot of different stereotypes from about people from the Caribbean and Africa, which is unfortunate too. One of the areas, and you're absolutely right, is how black people and the black Americans and the black immigrants don't necessarily get along well, I shouldn't say they don't get along, but we don't necessarily live together.
The black
immigrants are very, very, very education focused and very, very job career focused. They tend to have higher incomes than many mainstream white Americans.
Right.
Highly degreed, and they tend to live in communities with each other that are in predominantly white communities and not necessarily black communities, and very, very forward thinking group of people.
Right.
And very ambitious people. They are very, very ambitious people. And sometimes don't always agree with black Americans or relate to black Americans issues of where we are and why we are and what we do, and a lot less tolerant. So we do mention that. We have a sidebar about that and mention that in the book as well, because marketers tend to want to lump the black Caribbeans in with the African Americans. And again, we are people of color. We call each other brothers and sisters, but very different.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the Caribbean, they often, the black immigrants often have their own media as well. People tend to like to congregate in spaces where other people who are like them. And so we have to remind marketers, so you've got these black Americans who are different, the black Caribbeans who are different. So who are you really, really talking to? And we encourage them to place their messages in black immigrant media as well.
And I like you, the word tolerance, because what I have noticed over the years, there's not too many tolerance among us, because we cannot have a civil conversation, because a lot of people, they are looking at it as a bad thing that we are different. And I don't see it as a bad thing. I think if we learn to tolerate and collaborate, it is an added value to us.
I look at
the Asian community. I look at the Jewish community and all those people. When I go in a Jewish business, I don't see any black people in there working. When I go in an Asian market, I don't see any black people there working. We as blacks, we are oftentimes reluctant to hire each other and to take each other by the hand. You have to ask, so where are you from? You from down south, or are you from Africa? Are you from Jamaica? And if I say I'm from Jamaica, then it is as if I'm an outcast, instead of saying, okay, there is something I can teach you and there's something you can teach me, and together we can put that together and come up with something that will benefit our community.
Yes, that's true. There is, and when we tend to be, a lot of us, very insulated, and so we see that is one of the pervading perceptions about how we work and not work with each other. But actually, in a broader sense, Dr. Daphne, we are getting better at reaching out to each other, because we still, for many of us that don't make it through that funnel of wonderful success, of extreme or high success, we still have to do business with each other. And that's one of the things that is happening. For example, we see the point there is that we don't have the same access as mainstream does, and so we have to do business with each other. And one of the things that I talk about in the book is the boomerang effect.
Yes, that's on page.
We are seeing a lot of young people who went to great schools and got very high GPA, grade point averages, and went on to work at a lot of corporations. they are learning about their blackness later. And so they hit the ceiling of often inequality, and what they then do, many of them boomerang back, they come back to the black community because of limited access and or because they see that the black community needs help. And so they're developing businesses for the black community. And a lot of these businesses are in the form of new media. We're finding more, you know, the word on the street is black media is going out, just black radio isn't relevant, magazines, newspapers aren't relevant. But what's happening is that media has become a digital platform. These younger people are developing television programs on digital platforms where you can watch television online and developing programming and wonderful news and information sites as well as information sites in cyberspace. And
there is
a powerful, powerful black blogosphere that is way under marketers' radar because again just like what you're doing here with Blog Talk with your Blog Talk radio show there are more I understand more black Blog Talk listeners and participants than there are listening in mainstream media, which is incredible.
You know, it is alarming to see how many black people, as you say, is really embarrassed to embrace their blackness. I think it was Sunday I was speaking with a friend of mine. She pointed out to me that a member of her biological family, I mean like her auntie's child, said to her that she wasn't having much conversation with her because she's acting white. And she asked her what that means. She said, because I can have an intelligent conversation and I can debate on a point, you see that as me acting white? You know, that is deep.
Well, you know, Touré, and I quoted Touré. Touré is a MSNBC contributor, and he is an author and a journalist. And his latest book is Who's Afraid of Post-Racial Blackness? It's really, really, really good. And he talks about the different ways to be black in America. And he talks about the white gaze, G-A-Z-E, and the black gaze, G-A-Z-E. And the white gaze is how white America often sees black American and how they approach us by doing what we call resume checks. They look at they question our value. That is often something that black Americans do as well. We question each other's value. The other thing that black Americans do, the black gaze, G-A-Z-E, when we look at each other is we question our value. We also do resume checks. Who are you? Who do you come from? Who do you think you are? But we also are the black police and relegating ourselves to determining who is and who is not black enough. And I found myself doing that as well. I remember, and I shared a story, probably not in the book, but I wrote it on my Advertising Age blog about how I worked with Essence Magazine on their big study, Windows on Women. It was in 2005. And one of the researchers was a black woman from California. And she came into the meeting with this very black California girl dialect and tone. She was like, "Hi, guys. It's so cool to be here. I am so excited to be working with you. I just love Essence." And she went on and on and on. And we were like, whoa. So she shared her ideas for the research. And there were good ideas because she was a researcher and we were all working on the team. And one of her ideas wasn't what, you know, didn't work. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't going to work with what we wanted
to do.
For that
time, yeah.
So she shared her ideas. She left the meeting. We talked about her ideas. And the one idea that didn't work, I said, well, what do you expect? She ain't no real sister. And nobody defended her. We laughed and blah, blah, blah. And so this happened to Toure, too, when he went to college. And because he was raised in a black, a white community, he went to Emory University. He got there, he hung out with the white kids. Something happened to him that transformed him. He read Malcolm X, started hanging out with the black kids. He got into this discussion, a little altercation with one of the football players, and the guy said in front of all of the black kids, "Shut up, Toure, you ain't black," and nobody defended him. And so
wow.
I looked at that and thought, oh, my God, that she has – anyway, so I the woman and I, back in 2005, the Black Valley girl, we talked and met, and she told me her story, and she is black. And she talked about having older parents and how they were proud that she didn't sound like a black person because they were real old school. And
mm-hmm.
you know what? You can be a black scuba diver, a black talk show host, a black skier. You can be a black president of the United States, and you can be a black Valley girl.
Mm-hmm.
If there are 40 million black people, according to what Skip Gates says,
yeah.
of Princeton, 40 million black people, there are 40 million different ways to be black. And so that's something that we've got to stop. We've got to stop being this black police and talking about who's black or not and who's not. And the other thing, Daphne, I have friends who moved their children to the predominantly white suburbs and white communities because they wanted them to have what they believe is to have a better education and to have more exposure, whatever. And so
mm-hmm.
these kids, you know, they're millennials. They're my same age as my son, who was raised black. These black kids have no black friends, just like my black son has no white friends. It's not a judgment, but that's the way it is. So we need that means so that marketers, we need to stop judging that. And we need to then, but the real question is, who are you really talking to? And there
Definitely.
Are some black kids that are more mainstream because
mm-hmm.
of the way they were raised. And
that's right.
And that was one of the things that we talked about in the book as well. And again, it points to how we are all not the same, that we're very different and why we're different
mm-hmm.
from each other in meaningful ways.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a good point. We got to stop being the black police.
That's right. I like the section, and I was listening to you and trying to find it when I think his name is Alexander sent you that email.
Yeah. Yeah. That's in the very beginning of the book in the introduction.
Yes.
Alexander. Mm-hmm.
There's one part here under the boomerang effect I want to read about I am a black man who owns a communication firm. This is not a black business. I'm a mainstream marketer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an eye-opener for me, too, because I think if more marketers would concentrate on what you're doing, there would be better understanding in our community about our responsibilities to black businesses. Because
right.
I know blacks who you would have to, even if you threaten to put them on the cross to crucify them, they don't want to do business with another black person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say rightfully so, because there are a lot of stigma and judgment being cast upon black people and the way they do businesses. And their reputation is at stake. And then I ask the question, why is this so? Why can't we trust each other and help to elevate and lift each other up in business?
Well, I think, Daphne, you know, there are some of us that are not going to trust each other. I think we need to change the dialogue and talk about those that are elevating and helping people. Look at you
yes.
and me today. You invited me to be a part of your show. You have listeners that listen to your show. I looked on your Facebook page. You have almost 5,000 Facebook fans. So we do have support, but we have got to stop looking at what we don't have and celebrating
right.
what we do have. And
that's
so
right.
because we really, really are supporting each other more today than we ever have. And again, because we need to do better, Dr. Daphne, yes. But we are, you know, we really are supporting each other. There would be no black media at all, none at all, if we were not supporting each other. Some of the black businesses that exist in our community would not exist at all if the black community did not support them. So we, and in this day and age, I think, too, the point that you really are trying to make is that we do need to do better and we need to come together, because collaboration is really one of the things that's going to help make our business successful. I heard Butch Graves. There is a
mm-hmm.
Butch Stewart. He's a music. He has a music house here in Chicago. But
yes.
Butch Graves of the CEO of Black Enterprise speak recently at a Black media event that was hosted by Burrell Communications here in Chicago, and he said that we have got to put our egos down and we have got to come together and collaborate more. He said it is better to own 30% of a business that is profitable than 100% of a business that has got your name on it and you've got your chest stuck out that is not profitable. And so I'm telling you, that's one of the things that I've been doing more. I've been working with one example that I've been doing. I've been working with Hermine Hartman of Indigo Magazine. She has this wonderful magazine online. She does these great galas for scholarships. She does these great breakfast for champions meetings where she invites people like Vernon Jordan and, I think she's even had Barack Obama before
mm-hmm.
he was president. And she
mm-hmm.
has these very prominent people to come and speak. And it would be like 1,000 people at these breakfasts that started at 7:30 in the morning.
Wow.
But she's on the radio. She's an analyst. And we are working together to help each other.
Mm-hmm.
She's
mm-hmm.
helping to get my book in particular bookstores. I'm
mm-hmm.
helping her with her with some of the ideas that she wants to do. I mean, we are, and I'm seeing this collaboration of these black businesses and people coming together even to form their to form joint businesses. There's
mm-hmm.
a new website that I love called it's AtlantaBlackStar.com. AtlantaBlackStar.com. It is going to be like it's similar to like the New York Times, but it's news. It's a general national news, but it's news, information, politics, and sports information about black people. It's a nice, clean website, and it could be like the New York Times. I love it, and I think it would be a great resource for you,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Daphne, in
mm-hmm.
terms of developing talk show topics for
mm-hmm.
your audiences, because absolutely everything is there, and it changes daily. So, and that is a collaboration of this guy, Nick Childs, who was an editor of Odyssey Galore, a travel
mm-hmm.
magazine, and Neil Nelson, who
mm-hmm.
owned DimeWars.com. DimeWars.com is like the black YouTube. It's where you can go and get all these urban videos and commentary. and a lot of other people. And they formed this fabulous, fabulous site. I aspire blackstillmatters.com to be like that. I aspire to be that. So I think what we need to do is start the conversation about and spreading the story about how isn't it wonderful that black people are coming together and helping people. And here's some examples, and you and viewers and listeners, what are your examples? And even though we've got this momentum going of black collaboration and coming together, we still need to do better. It's better to own 30% of something profitable than 100% of something that's not profitable. I think that's got to be our mantra moving forward.
That's right. So, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. Pepper, I want to give these people, I want to welcome guests 935 and 944 to the chat. I want to let you know that the lines are open. I want to hear you call in. The number to call is 646-915-8166 if you have a question for Pepper Miller. And we are here talking about her new book and her passion for the improving and increasing
your
cultural IQ. So I want to hear from you. 646-915-8166. You know, on page 137 of Black Still Matters, where you point out about parents, black parents are also more likely to teach their children to respect their elders and not question authority, versus 50% versus 33% for white parents. And that was such an affirmation for me, because that's a pet peeve for me. I oftentimes see tiny kids, 7, 6, 8 year olds, looking at grown adults, telling them, "You are not my mom and my dad. You don't correct me." And I oftentimes mumble under my breath, "You're lucky your mom and your papa ain't black, because you wouldn't be saying that." When I saw that, I said, oh, so it's not only in my West Indian culture that this is being implemented, you know, where you say, "Mister, even now I'm grown, I'm in my 60s, and I go to Jamaica, and people I knew when I was growing up, and I'm calling them Mr. and Mrs. and Miss and all of that. And they are saying to me, oh, Miss Sweetie, you are now grown. You can call me John or Dolores, but I still cannot do it."
Right.
I have this respect embedded in me for them.
Right. Yes. Again, with this, we're all the same and we're the human race and blah, blah, blah. One of the insights that is missed is that black parents tend to parent differently. And in some cases, we still believe in spanking. And it is for many of us, I think it's a generational issue where older people versus some of the younger, better educated, higher income black parents do not spank. It is a generational thing. But across the board, we're more likely to spank. We're also more likely, and there was a study on CNN's website that talked about how 75% of African-American parents are more likely to talk about race to kindergartners versus 75% of whites who do not. So this whole idea about, and you're right, about parenting, and it is, it's Miss Pepper or it's Uncle Ron, it's Dr. Daphne or Miss Daphne, that is still, even across all generations, that's still a practice in the black community. And we have seen, there's a new website called blackandmarriedwithkids.com. You know, for people who think that, parenting is the same, these guys launched this website, and thousands of people, black people, have been flocking to this site to have conversations about about parenting and sharing positive stories, too, mm-hmm. about Black parenting, because it's different. It's not deficient, but it's different. Different is not deficient, and we need to celebrate those things that are different and go after those things that are different in our culture and connect with them so that we can improve our cultural IQ and see mm-hmm. increased revenue in mm-hmm. our brand bottom mm-hmm. line.
McDonald's, I had mentioned about fast food in the beginning, and in the book you have included 365black.com, and here under this chapter where you mentioned that respecting Black consumers through recognition, and McDonald's has made the commitment to do so, and you have also included the site there. I want to ask you, okay, you had committed to staying 1 hour. I want to ask you to just summarize our conversation after you talk about this question, and also to tell people where you have book signing coming up and where they can pick up a copy of the book, and whether or not you're open to coming into organization to talk about your book and let them purchase your book in bulk or whatever, because everybody needs to have this book. So why this book, Pepper, and why now? Why do you think that this is the time for this book?
Because this is the time for this book. As people are, particularly marketers and businesses, are looking at opportunities to increase their revenue and their bottom line, it's the time to look and celebrate Black culture and connect with Black culture. It's also the time, too, because this country is more divided today with this Black president than it's been in a long time. And it's a time to come together to understand who we are as a people, and again to celebrate our culture. It's a time to change from looking at, well, not only change from that, well, maybe increase that. This whole idea of one message can reach everyone. It's mm-hmm. not necessarily wrong, but it's best to change from not judging differences, but looking at different as not being deficient. And that mm-hmm. Black America today is more different than they've ever been. And it's an opportunity to connect with Black people based on our differences and our culture, to understand the boomerang effect, to understand okay. that we are splintering, to understand that the Black blogosphere and social network is extremely powerful. That's how the game, the television show, The Game, got back on television for a whole new season. BET saw 7.7 million viewers when they launched The Game on BET as a result of Black people galvanizing themselves in Black social media. It was all under the radar of mainstream marketers. So Black is an opportunity to Black is Black. Black, you know, it is the new Black, and we need to embrace it. You can purchase my book on Amazon. You can purchase it from Amazon.com. You can purchase it from our publisher, ParamountBooks.com, or you can purchase it from me at BlackStillMatters.com. Mm-hmm. I'm having a big book signing in Chicago at the DuSable Museum. I am so excited about it. DuSable Museum is our African-American history museum, and we have 250 people, clients, ad agencies, media people, thought leaders who have already signed up to attend the book signing. It's May 30th in the DuSable Museum in Chicago. It starts at 5:30 with a wonderful reception of good food and good wine and beer. And
I wish I was in Chicago.
Yeah, it's going to be good. And we're having a panel discussion mm-hmm. with McGee Williams Ofe, president of Burrell, Melody Van Cooper, the president of WVON, Cheryl Pearson McNeil of Nielsen, Kevin Giglinto, the VP of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, Mickey Brazil of the Roosevelt University, and Hermine Hartman of Indigo Magazine, who is moderating, and, of course, myself, who is going to share a PowerPoint presentation about the book, and we're going to be tweeting about it and talking about it, and then we'll have more conversation. I'm still here. Definitely.
Are you still there?
I'm still here. Can you not hear me?
Yeah, no, I can. We weren't hearing you before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're having that we're concentrating on that, and but you can reach me at pepper@huntermillergroup.com if anyone wants to reach out to us, or go to our website huntermillergroup.com or blackstillmatters.com share your thoughts and share your insights. And
we'll need to get a link for the book on the radio site or my website, so when visitors come here, we have a lot of traffic here on the website.
Do some of your people have some questions for me that I could answer?
Yes, I want to ask, come on, because everything is so good and people always just sit and chill and listen. I want the people in the chat room, come on, guys, call up. The number is 64. It's funny, every time I say to call in, somebody clicks off from the chat room, and I think they're going to call. So call in. The number is 646-915-8166, and Pepper is willing to answer any questions that you may have. So, Colin, this is your opportunity to get her undivided attention. While we wait for those calls, Pepper, what are your intentions for the Black community after they read this book? What are you hoping to see begin to happen?
I'm hoping that the Black community will, first of all, realize their value in society and in the marketplace. I hope that they will be better business owners. I hope that they will be better consumers. I hope that they will pay more attention to who's doing business with the Black community. And why, who's investing in the Black community and why. I'm hoping that they will give more support to those businesses that invest in the Black community. And I don't mean not only running an ad, but I mean really companies that do business with the Black community. Because there's opportunities for Black businesses to do business with a lot of these companies, the General Mills, the McDonald's, the Procter & Gamble's, the Pine Sols that I mentioned, that I mentioned in the book. And so I hope that we will start also thinking bigger. That's one of the things that I discovered even about myself and a lot of Black businesses. We don't think big enough. We need to think bigger. I think one of the great magazines that I read, in addition to all of the black magazines, I think Black Enterprise is a good magazine too for helping us think bigger and better and coming together. But another mainstream magazine that I find interesting is Fast Company. It is a magazine about technology, but they have a lot. You know, when they put out the 50 largest best technology companies, they talk about companies that are also not technology companies, and I think there's a lot of ideas in there that can help you think about how can I take my business from a mom and pop to something that's bigger. I mean, just by fulfilling a need that we may have. One of the things that I love is, for example, is this new apparatus and app called Square. I can sell books anywhere in the world as long as I have Wi-Fi by using Square and my phone.
Wow.
I can type in, I mean, the app is free. You download the app And you can sell anything. You can, and you swipe a person's credit card. You punch in their, you know, their numbers. You have them sign on your phone. The money downloads to your bank account, and you can email them a receipt. And it's like 2.5. Those kinds of things that we need to understand. So the whole mercantile system has been transformed because of this application. And someone came up that because it's a need, because instead of trying to schlep around a big machine where you have to have electrical outlet and
merge
a dial up, right, you can sell anything anywhere in the world on your phone via this app called Square. So, and it's free. It's free. And they send you the apparatus free. They charge you for every swipe, it's 2.5%. I think the mercantile people were charging 10%, something crazy.
25.
Yeah. So,
I think SQUARE.
SQUARE Square. It's wonderful. You can sell anything. And it was funny, I was at a conference where I was a speaker, well, I was a moderated panel, and they said, Pepper, bring some of your books. You can sell some of your books. And I was selling books and just swiping the card. And if the swipe reader doesn't work, you can punch in the card numbers. And what happens is a person using that, using that, your credit card is not stored in your phone. It downloads the money to your account that night. I think PayPal, you have to wait 2 or 3 days, but I think it downloads that night or at least the very next day. And so they take 3.5% if you have to punch in the numbers, and 2.5% if you use the swipe. And it's like the bomb. And so we as Black business owners need to know that and get more involved in technology and really understanding how technology can really help us, and how we can think of ideas like that too. Mm-hmm. You can think of something that, you know, people need more of blank, fill in the blank. And
you can
come together with someone and develop an app. That guy that created that card swiper, billionaire. And that's something that just from somebody saying, God, I wish we can, I wish I didn't have to carry around this big credit card machine. I wish I could, take the money. Because that was my issue. It's like, I don't want to schlep this. What am I going to do? And bam, here's Square. And it's on my, the app is free. The apparatus is free. And it's on my phone. And the guy's a millionaire. I absolutely love it.
Pepper, does that only work with the iPhone, or it works?
No, it
does
not. Any phone.
Wow.
Yeah, It plugs into your socket. The card reader plugs into your earphone socket.
Oh,
and
the earphone piece on the phone.
Yeah, phone. And if it doesn't work again, you can just use the phone. You can use your dial pad. It's very simple to work. It's wonderful to see it. It's the same thing. It says you got the credit card. It asks you which one. You put the numbers in, the code. You can check people's ID to make sure it has it. You put the code in the back. It says processing, and you turn it over. You have the people sign with their finger, their fingertips.
Wow.
They can sign with the finger. You hit done, and then you ask them, do you want me to email your receipt to you? And you can email the receipt. One of the things that I do, too, is I take a picture of whatever it is they're buying. So that picture goes on to the receipt, be it earrings or whatever.
And that picture is taken with the phone, too.
You take it with the phone.
Wow.
Take the picture with the phone. That becomes part of the receipt. It's very easy to set up, trust me. You guys would love it. So,
and we go to square.com for that, right?
Yes. Square.com, sign up for it. They'll mail you the thing, and then you're rocking and rolling.
I am definitely going to be looking at that, because I can really benefit from that. And, you know, I'm going to ask you to summarize, Pepper, but I want to tell you thanks for this book.
You're welcome.
Because I needed this book like I need salvation, because I am so behind on all the things that I ought to be doing.
Yes.
And to be doing the correct way.
Yes.
I know I cannot do it alone, and I know I need to reach out there and to collaborate with others, and that's what I'm looking to do. So much.
You should, Dr. Daphne, because you are, you know what, you're more ahead than you think. You're on Blog Talk Radio, girlfriend. There's so many people that are not, and so you can collaborate and have. I would collaborate with someone, because you're already set up, and you can post, and you can make your show bigger and get sponsors.
Yes, I need that.
You got 5,000 people on Facebook. You're doing a lot better than you think, Dr. Daphne. But
Are you ready for this, Pepper?
What?
I have 25,000 regular listeners on the radio and 650,000 followers on the radio.
Well, you've got to maximize that, and you can do that by looking for someone who's like-minded with you, because that's a tremendous value.
That's what I want.
That you have, yeah. So
I might be the first entrepreneur hunter group work with.
Yeah, hey, I was going to say, maybe we should talk.
Yeah, let's talk. Because you talk
let's
about
talk.
Thinking big, and there is
Absolutely.
A project I'm doing now, and I'm thinking extremely big, and I need to reach out. So I'm definitely going to reach out and to talk with you. And I want you to please summarize, because I want to stay respectful of your time, and you have already exceeded the hour. And
yeah, I just want to encourage people to think black. That black consumers today and black America today is different. We're very important. Different is not deficient, and we provide an opportunity for we're an opportunity segment for business. Black matters in politics. Black culture matters in religion. Black matters in parenting. It definitely matters in marketing, as I've named my book. And so to keep that in mind. Again, visit us at blackstillmatters.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow me on Facebook, Black Still Matters, Pepper Miller, the Hunter Miller Group. I have all of those Facebook pages. And I look forward to coming back on your show,
yes,
Daphne. And we'll talk, Dr. Daphne. We'll talk.
I was going to ask you about coming back, because I am going to a meeting in New York this evening. This lady is putting on, she wants to put a gathering together called Millionaire Minds.
Mm-hmm.
And she invite me to be part of it, and I will be taking the book with me and to introduce the gathering to pick up a copy of this book, because based on the preliminary meeting she and I had yesterday, I know this book will be an integral part of what she's putting together.
Okay, well, I appreciate that very much.
I will be taking the book with me and to talk to them about it. And I am going to be in touch with you. I'm reprimanding you listeners, those in the chat room and everything, for not calling. But I will keep you informed of the download, because I know this is going to be a powerful download for people. It will be one of the featured episodes on the archive that people have access to.
Very good.
I will look forward to you being back. I'm going to complete reading the book and then have you back, and then we can take it from there. We won't necessarily go over the conversation we had this morning, but
no problem.
We will go more in-depth of the contents of the book.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you so much,
Pepper, and continue the great work that you are doing to enlighten us in the Black community. God bless you.
You too. It's my pleasure and blessings to your listeners as well. And I will be in touch. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And that was Pepper Miller, the author of Black Still Matters. And as I had put out on Twitter and on the Facebook page, I want to continue to discuss this book for the next 45 minutes. And I think it is only fitting. You heard Pepper mention about her co-author of the first book, What's Black About It, Herb Kempen. She wrote a memory here for Kemp. And she says, "My BFF, I miss you. I miss your big presence, the immensity of your mind and wit, so smart, so funny. I miss your laugh, so loud and infectious. I miss seeing you always, always stylish, always sharp, so Amarni. I miss our conversations and debates. I miss learning from you and hearing your perspective about marketing and particularly the Black consumer, so passionate. I miss us, your wonderful spirit and brilliant contributions are the legacy of all who knew you and to the market and advertising industries." And that's Pepper's dedication to the late Herb Kemp, who died last year, as she mentioned on the show, from a heart attack, and they had co-authored the book. And I just want to run down the contents and the different chapters of the book. So you will be encouraged to go out and pick a copy up. It has an amazing introduction about the new Black. You heard Pepper mention that Black is back. And here are the chapters. And you will agree with me that these chapters will add value to who you are. The first chapter is The Profitable Invisible Middle. Chapter 2, The Dynamics of Black Consumer Marketing. Chapter 3, Black America Today, It's Still a Different World. Chapter 4, Black Gold, Finding the Mother Lode Hidden in Plain Sight. Chapter 5, Another Opportunity, Wellness Matters. Chapter 6, Under the Radar, Black Immigrants and Black Biracials by J.P. James. Chapter 7, Under the Radar, The Black LGBT Community by Reginald Osborne. And Black Under the Radar, Black Men by Sarah Latimer. Chapter 9, Under the Radar, Black Baby Boomers. Under the Radar, Black Woman, by Sarah Latimer. Under the Radar, Blacks and Green Movement. Chapter 12, Making a Connection. Chapter 13, Black Media Matter, Old Rules Don't Apply by Pepper Miller with Kevin Walker. And chapter 14, Research Must Be Relevant. Chapter 15, Blacks in Advertising Matters. Chapter 16, Why Blacks Still Matters. And then you have about the contributing authors. And I tell you, this is such a special book here. I'm thumbing through. There's so much richness here. And I want to choose some section here. Why don't I go ahead and just read the introduction for the new black. A genuine leader is not a searcher for consensus, but a molder of consensus. And that's a quote by Martin Luther King Jr. Not long ago, Alexander Robinson, a student of Jackson State University and also the president of the school's chapter of American Marketing Association, sent me an email. He wrote, "After browsing your website, I read the section concerning the mask, similar to the web debauches this veil. This leads me to ask, should I be pursuing a mission of leading more African Americans into the field of marketing, or should I be developing aspiring young minds by removing the whole racial context? Is black consumer behaving much different from whites? Is it now time to stop labeling? Is it time to stop?" I've lost my... Is black consumer behavior much different from white? Is it now time to stop labeling and perhaps limiting ourselves with race? Alexander is not the first to question my Black America focus and challenge my company's reason for being. When writing about Black America for Advertising Age's multicultural blog, The Big Tent, a few readers accused me of fostering separatism. Yet I continue to respectfully disagree. When I launched my company in 1985, I wasn't focused on African American. I just wanted to do research to understand what makes people tick. However, when I arrived for my in-person appointment with the consumer foods company, I was told, "We don't have African American projects. When we move toward that direction, we'll call you." After enough of those responses and a portfolio that contained only black consumers research projects, I decided to embrace the segment, to be the black consumer expert. Since that revolution and the gaps in knowing that many corporations and society have about Black America, the Hunter Miller Group's mission has been to help corporations and organizations develop a deeper contextual understanding of Black America consumer. This learning will provide corporations with the tools needed to create powerful, relevant, and engaging messages. Thus, my objective is to bring people together and help them increase their cultural IQ by providing real as opposed to invented insights with respect to Black America. I am passionate about our mission, but I'm not separatist. And that's what I told Alexander. Everything we do, everything included this book, is an extension of the Hunter Miller Group's mission. Within the 5+ years since I co-authored What's Black About It with the late Herb Kemp in 2005, much has changed in America. YouTube launched earlier that year, but there was no social media expulsion. Facebook, Twitter, Flickr, and Constant Contact did not exist. Neither did the iPhone, Droid, or iPad, and there was no President Barack Obama. Obviously, the landscape is altered. Yet, despite several major studies that exploited the changing Black America population, there has been little discussion among marketers about the studies resulted and conclusions, and few meaningful discussions about how marketers can better speak to Black Americans. Black Americans have never been a monolith, but they have never been more diverse than they are today. Since the election of Barack Obama, the country sees more socially and racially polarized than ever. The civil rights movement continues to be divided lines between two mindsets, those who fought for it and those who take it for granted. Black Americans are making huge strides in education, politics, and business, while balancing their desire to stay connected with Black identity and Black culture. Black millennials reject the traditional definition of Black. Black doesn't really define them. Most are about being open and inclusive. Yet, many still want to congregate in spaces where there are other Black people like them. Additionally, a millennial age and experience the real world, many are really reevaluating their perceptions about race relations in America and reexamining their relations between their identity and culture with an idea of being successful. The definition of Black family is changing. 73% of all Black births are to single moms. At the same time, being a single Black mom no longer means you are a bad mom. More Black men are focusing on the importance of good role modeling and being more involved fathers. The digital divide is finally diminishing as Blacks are catching up with Caucasians on online access and surpassing them in mobile computing. There are countless successful new media platforms created by Blacks for Blacks in support of the strong, powerful Black social media and Black blogosphere. Yet, when marketers consider complex dynamics like these, they find themselves facing a wealth of opportunities and one impossible to ignore conclusion: Black still matters. I talk with Alexander for over an hour. I shared these thoughts with him, sent him some of my articles, and directed him toward some relevant websites and blogs, such as Advertising Age's The Big Tent. I also asked him to read some particular eloquent posts by Tim Wise, an American anti-racist activist and author who, as a white male, writes passionately and prophetically about equality, race, and social justice. A few days later, Alexander sent me this email message. Thank you, Pepper. I had not realized how much social ideas played into marketing. I read your blog as well as some of the commentary by Tim Wise. This is something that I believe all my peers and classmates should know about. This book is not about targeting as much as it is about attempting to help move the market conversation forward, to show what the history, emotions, insight, and findings really mean. The Black still matters in marketing. I offer frank talks about solutions that will help marketers better understand and speak about comfortable with Black America. Why this subject? Why now? Because now is the right time. Marketers are fighting for their survival. Companies are downsizing, merging, or being acquired at a phenomenal rate. The economy has slowed, and the number of competitors has increased in many markets segments. The pace of doing business has increased in an unimaginable speed with the growth of the internet. To say marketers are busy is an understatement. Many marketers have seen their workloads and responsibility double, even triple, while they are given less time to think. It is a struggle to keep up with current markets, let alone learn and understand ever-growing and evolving multicultural segments. It is easy to understand how markets can mistakenly accept the myth within each multicultural market segment that all Blacks are the same, all Latinos are the same, and all Asians are the same. This isn't done out of disrespect as much as from a lack of understanding of the people that make up the segment. It is easier and feels more politically correct to adopt myths such as we are all alike, or as in the case of Tim and and Kathy, that story is on page 11 of the book, The Past Racial Mindset, who embrace the belief that people are people. It is easy to see how a single umbrella strategy for all segment is preferred. Marketers are not completely in the dark when it comes to the issue of multicultural marketing, according to the 2008 study of the research firm Heidrick and Struggles, conducted by Brandsati. 84% of the market believe multicultural marketing is critical to my business, yet 40% said they don't know the financial value of multicultural groups to their companies. Carla Palzoa, a partner of Hedrick and Suggles, said the recruiting firm commissioned this study to discover what companies need to target multicultural segment, particularly what sort of talent they were looking for, and specifically through the eyes of the CMO. The study found a disconnect. Many CMOs recognize the importance of multicultural marketing, but many companies still lack a real company-wide strategy to address it. The root of this is the lack of awareness in the organization, while the CMOs understand it well. He or she almost has evangelized the value of multicultural marketing to the rest of the company. Ms. Palzoa said, there's no quick or easy fix to this issue. We can't wave a wand and make everything work. It is going to take a better understanding and exposure of to multicultural segments. Marketers are going to have to find the time to create a strategy that includes multicultural marketing and identify the people to execute this strategy. As marketers create strategies that include multicultural segments, there's another issue or hurdle they will have to clear: not knowing the consumer. Marketers have to understand that they cannot judge customers for being different from them or by some idealistic standards that does not represent real customers. Instead, marketers are going to have to get to know these segments individually, and see them for who they really are and learn their experience and needs. This is a real opportunity to forge deep and lasting relationships with groups of customers who have been overlooked and unengaged. Real insights are more than light bulb moments. They are gleaned from opening up to people and situations that are completely different from our own. Experience is still the best teacher, more than reading or hearing about something. Sometimes we have to embrace being uncomfortable to become uncomfortable with one another. To become comfortable with one another. I learned this with my first intern. I was open to working with him, but I have to admit, I was also a bit little leery. How is a person who just landed from China, literally, a bit, and MBA candidate with good English language and computer skills going to work on a block consumer trend? I asked myself. Thankful, my apprehension quickly faded. After our first conversation, we were both excited. We immediately began to talk about cultural differences with interests. I shared examples of Black nuances that helped shape successful marketing campaigns, and he shared his experiences with Black acquaintances. Later, he told me that he had questions that he wanted to ask his Black acquaintances to get to know them better and understand their culture, but was afraid of being labeled insensitive, stupid, or racist. Sometimes we are the creators of the class system that we despise. We refuse to walk in others' shoes, to attempt to see the world through their eyes. Instead, we try to force people to be more like us, to think like us. It is not something done maliciously. Many don't even realize what they're doing. I've worked with a couple of clients who had products that were targeted to mid to lower income consumers. In those cases, African American represented a significant percentage of their businesses. We talked with this segment in focus groups and one-on-one interviews to learn about their needs. And when the consumer spoke to their colloquial language and told stories about their stylish lifestyles, what didn't fit with the client's upscale attitude, the client was turned off. These marketers proceeded to craft marketing and advertising totally ignored the language, stories, and lifestyle that research had shown to exist. And marketers wonder why their messages aren't resonating with different groups. It's okay that your customers are different than you. The one-way mirror of our research session was more than a device for observing consumers in an investigative setting. It was a wall that divided the haves from the have-not. On one side, we have the consumer telling us their own words, how they move through the world. And on the other side of the glass are marketers and advertisers, professionals refusing to take full advantage of the powerful insights and truths being shared with us. That can't be true is the rationale for not listening, not connecting, and not understanding. We make the mistake of telling consumers what we feel they need to hear. Let's encourage them to meet our standard instead of embracing the opportunity to get to know them and serving them where they are. Times are changing, and so is the racial makeup of Americans. Marketers cannot afford to lag behind in learning how to build relationships with the growing multicultural segment, nor can marketers continue to attempt to face everyone to fit one standardized description. There is always going to be one big brand message But instead, that message should be a multitude of smaller conversations that help to build and shape how people interact with the company or brand. Learning to take part in all these conversations is the challenge facing marketers. Success comes from embracing the differences and showing that companies understand and respect the individuality of the segments. Is it Black or African American? At the end of my presentation, every group, before groups, the number one question most often privately asked by white audience member is, how do African Americans want to be addressed, Blacks or African American? It's a fair question, but the best answer I can offer requires a little backstory. The backstory is essential because racial labels do make a difference, and getting them right at the right time and in the right context means understanding and paying attention to social shifts and trends. I was born and raised in Chicago, but also lived with my family in the South during some of the most critical years of the civil rights movement. When I was 7 to 11 in grade school, I recall a heated squabble during recess between two boys in my fifth grade class. Although there were no punches thrown and I heard no cursing, things got loud and a crowd began to form. Finally, one of the teachers intervened. He called me Black. The accuser yelled. When the teacher questioned them, systematically oohs and emerged from the sidelines. Black then, dubbing a person of African descent Black, especially in the South, was roughly as offensive to Black people as Don Imus' infamous Don Imus' infamous slanderous comments about the Rutgers University women's baseball team in 2007. There has been an evolution in the racial label applied to African Americans over the years, one that has frequently proceeded simultaneously along multicultural tracks. We were Negroes in the North and colored in the South for the longest time. Then in the 1960s, James Brown told us to stand up and proclaim our Blackness through the powerful, unforgettable personal anthem for the Black people. Say it loud, I'm Black and proud. In 1988, another phase of the evolution took place in the term African American became popular when Reverend Jesse Jackson held a news conference to encourage Americans to use it when referring to Blacks. However, since then, several socialite shifts have caused a resurgence of the use of Black. For one thing, the 2000 census was the first to encourage people of self selected their race. This fueled more conscious discussions about where people fit in and how they prefer to be addressed. In addition, the hip-hop culture's mandate to keep it real helped reintroduce Black as a positive expression of intimacy and familiarity, which contrasted strongly with the negative baggage the phrase carried before and during the Civil War civil rights movement. We also saw an increase in the term usage among both African and Caribbean immigrants who preferred Blacks as a term reflecting acceptance as a thread within America's cultural fabric. In 2008, when the question was posed to 3,400 African Americans for the Black American Today study, the two prevailing terms finished in almost a dead heat. 44% said they preferred Black, 43% preferred African American, only 11% didn't care. Current trends indicate a slight preference for Black, in part because an increase in African and Caribbean immigrants. The current best answer to the question is that African American and Black are at present used interchangeably. Within the community, these terms described, I will be doing the same throughout this book. And I just read through the introduction of the book, Black Still Matters. And earlier on, I had the author, Pepper Miller, on the show. And I was excited about having her on, and I was honored when she said that she will be back on the show. And chapter one begins with saying the profitable invisible middle. And I'm going to read a little of that, and I'm praying that you will pick up a copy of Pepper's book. The profitable invisible middle. Imagine making an estimated $150 million from your stage plays with an estimated audience of 3,500 per week for the 300 shows per year that you produce, while most America has no idea who you are. It's not hard to imagine if you are Tyler Perry, ranked by Forbes magazine 211 as the 60th highest paid man in Hollywood, and with a string of solid hit movies and a very popular TV sitcom. Perry is realizing crossover success today. But even before this, success wasn't new for Perry. It is estimated that between 1990 and 2005, Perry's plays generated a gross income of $150 million. The people in the beauty shops, barber shops, blue collar worker, and our lower income people, those are the people that have been there for me since the beginning, states Tyler Perry. By the numbers, 2010 Black population hiding in plain sight. Black and mixed, 42 million or 13.6% of the U.S. population. Black only, 38.9 million or 12.6% of the U.S. population. 24, the numbers of states in which blacks are the largest majority group. Latinos are the largest minority groups in 20 states. An accountant might think that to achieve this level of success, Perry has tapped into a huge mass market with his plays, movies, and TV shows, but he hasn't. The secret to Perry's success lies in his ability to engage the segment of the market called the invisible middle, Black Americans. Black American tends to be viewed in extremes today, both by society at large and by marketers. There are the high-profile celebrities, entertainers, and sport figures on one side, and the impoverished, crime-ridden, and down-and-out on the other. The flawed perception results of the rest of us, the invisible middle. Between ignored and marginalized, according to the late Herb Kemp, he was the co-author of African American Cultural Marketing book, What's Black About It, and also coined the phrase, the invisible middle. More than one homogeneous group, the invisible middles are segmented by class, socioeconomic mindsets, and the number of segments that fly away under the average marketer's radar. Blacks, LGBTs, blacks, biracial, men, women, black boomers, black immigrants. Each will be discussed in future chapters. How Perry attracts the invisible middle. No strangers to his own audience segment, Perry faced his share of adversity at the extreme end of the spectrum, having endured a painful childhood and for a time homeless. Leaning on his own experience and knowledge, Perry was able to tap into the group that many marketers are either unable to see or refuse to acknowledge: working class blacks living satisfying insular lifestyle. This segment is more likely to be underexposed both socially and culturally than other groups, as they prefer to live, worship, and play exclusively in the black community. They are invisible because most people don't recognize them or hear from them. Few are asking their opinions or considering them viable marketing targets. But Perry's box office numbers and Nielsen's rating reflects their power. Perry's success originated from his chitlin circuit, stage production mentioned earlier. These plays follow a consistent formula: loud, slapish production that provide an additional and often entertainment option for many working class. Although they're black, often criticize Perry for his content and successful sitcoms, House of Pain and Meet the Browns, these programs have continued to hold up rankings for years on cable TV shows, most watching by black audience. Perry's audience particularly describe the show as funny and real, and often associate the characters with someone they know personally. They also strongly identify with hardship issues that Perry serves us such as drugs and addiction often plague the black community. They don't see Perry's exploitation of these issues as stereotypical or exploitive. Instead, their affinity with these shows is an appreciation for the positive solution at the end of each episode. And it doesn't hurt that the show carried the unspoken FUBU attempt for us buyers. Perry provides elements of truth, realism, authenticity, and transform them into the entertainment, escapism, and segment of the population that represents not only the unknown but also the untouchables. Kemp may have named Perry's target audience the invisible middle, but Perry has recognized that using these available on top buying powers to become a visible Hollywood success story for those willing to see. Wow. I tell you, this book is powerful. So go out, pick it up. Black Still Matters in the Market by Pepper Miller and a few more contributing authors. I am excited about today's segment. Share the link with others. I see you on Sunday at 7 p.m. and I'll see you next Wednesday again at 10 p.m. Thank you all for your support, and I look forward to hearing from you your feedback about today's segment.
My destiny. Come on, you declare it to the Lord. Thank you, Jesus. I speak purpose tonight. Hallelujah. You will open that business and direct it. Hallelujah. To my destiny. I know what I'm here for. Tell the Lord, thank you. Hallelujah. For every trial that came with the slave. Hallelujah. For every struggle that came with the slave. I'm mighty grateful. I said I'm mighty grateful. You feel it in your spirit? Tell the Lord. Hallelujah. For showing me. Almost see the breaking of day. It's destiny. Then I know what I know, what I know, what I'm here for. Yeah. Oh, for showing me to the Lord tonight and directing me. Hallelujah. To my destiny. He's a strong God. You may not be able to touch it right now. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Hallelujah. Can you see it? Can you feel it? Everybody, you're going into a new dimension tonight. You'll never ever see it again the same way. You'll never ever touch it again the same way. You've been called with a great call. It's a monumental call. You've been called to change nations and generations. Come on and pray.